philosophers in
space, 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 space.
Many men have tried.
They tried and failed.
They tried and died.
Here's the truth. We're totally gonna kill you now.
No way!
Yes, way, Ted!
Where is Gamora?
Yeah, I'll do you one better.
Who's Gamora?
I'll do you one better. Why is Gamora?
Come home to the unique flavor of shattering the grand illusion. Come home to Simple Rick.
And welcome to Philosophers in Space. This is episode 55. I'm Thomas Smith. That over there is Aaron Rabinowitz. How's it going, Aaron?
All right, Thomas. Imagine a lot of boxes. All right. imagine yes. 17,000 boxes. You got that? You got it in your head? Huh? Box boy?
Yes. That is finally the boxes are paying off. I'm going to tell you this. We've got a special guest. It's Cecil of Cognitive Dissonance. How's it going, Cecil?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you for coming on. Now, here's the thing. In case one of us is like a, you know, on edge murderer who can't contain his temper, I'm going to check which one of us is opening their eyes the most all the time. Like, just wide open eyes. It's Aaron. It's Aaron. Run. Run. It's
the Michelle Bachman School of Acting.
Yeah. Oh man, that's good.
I do want to. Can I just start though, really quickly? Like, I am so excited to be on this show. So in 2000, I graduated with a bachelor's degree in philosophy. So
in cubes.
In 2000, and
boxology.
This is the first time I'm going to use it since 2000. So thank you so much, guys. It's so exciting.
My students don't listen to what he's saying. It's very useful.
Yeah. Take that, Dad. I knew it would work for something. Eventually,
you're telling me that you haven't argued with anyone since then?
Yeah. Well, I knew how to argue before I got the degree. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Uh-oh. Shots fired early. Here we go.
You know what, Cecil, I'm realizing it's been like I'm pretty sure it's been like a year of being back and forth, like, we should get you on the show. I just realized.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's literally a year, because wasn't it Oklahoma City at the last AACon where we were talking about it?
Yeah, that's right.
Almost the entire length
and
of the show.
I would have thought it's been like a month or two, but it's actually been a calendar year, a full.
Because when I went on vacation in June last year, I listened to your Dune episodes while I was on the road.
Good stuff, classic stuff.
I love Dune. I think it's amazing. I like it more than Thomas.
We're positioned for the Villanueva one. It's going to be great. Yeah. We're going to do like 20 episodes. It's going to be a whole season.
25 episodes.
I'm looking for a replacement if anybody wants to take my part.
We're auditioning for pool cleaning robots, if you know anybody.
But this is, we're talking about Cube on this particular episode, and this is just, for me, this is perfect, low budget, horrible acting, inconsistent writing, but solid concept, sci-fi. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite. That's good 90s sci-fi. It's like, oh, this is almost a good movie.
Mm-hmm. With just a little sous-sante of Canada, just drizzled on top.
Yeah. I was but a lad of 11 when this came out. And I remember when I was like 12 or 13, I had a friend who was super into this movie and he got me into it and I liked it. I was like, oh, that's good. But even as a 13-year-old, this is one of those ones where I was like, I think the acting is kind of bad. That's how you know.
Even as a 13-year-old.
Not the best performances, but that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's really so unbelievably bad, though. The acting is really bad. Also, like, some of the motivations in this.
Yeah, exactly.
Most of the motivations are pretty stupid.
Right.
But you're right. You are right. Solid concept for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it, all the rest of the pieces that go into that, what it reminded me of is why I stopped doing movie review shows. That's what it reminded me of.
Right. I always forget about that. Yeah, you started off as a movie review show, and then you saw Cube, and you're like, I can't do this. No, you saw Dune. No, I'm just kidding. I'm in the minority there. I better not crack any Dune jokes.
I don't think I've ever seen a Dune. I've read a Dune, but I've never seen
Oh, you never saw? Oh, okay. There you go. I'm glad we have Cecil here. I feel like he's, you know, it's helping me in my cause against Aaron to talk about these things. But we usually save our making fun of the movie for After Dark. We'll poke a few jabs here or there. But in the meantime, we better hop on over to the exposition zone and explain what in the world this series of boxes, each more boxier than the next, actually is.
You're traveling through another dimension beyond that which is known to podcasters. It is the middle ground between fair use and copyright infringement, between ordinary fanboying and meaningful analysis. It is the exposition zone.
Okay, Cecil, do you want to take a crack at just taking us through the premise here, and we'll help you out?
So it starts out with I think one person, then it like several people sort of enter in the same cube room, and it eventually turns out that they've all just woken up in this what seems to be like a prison, a very high tech prison, and they start to try to figure out. Start to figure out why they're there, and then they are interrupted by a guy who you'll find out later is a prison escape artist who is trying to get out of there, and so they start to follow him. He's quickly taken out of the plot, though, in a really hilarious way. He gets maced with acid and then falls down dead. And then they're all sort of trying to figure out why they're there. And they start to talk a little. You find that one guy is a police officer. A woman is a physician. There's a guy who you'll find out later designed the outer portion of the cube. And then a girl who's something of a math genius. They eventually run into an autistic savant who is a even bigger math genius, but only on like one problem he knows really, really well. And so then they start to make their way through the cube. They figure that prime numbers has something to do with the traps, and because each room may have a trap that could cut them in half, and sometimes they don't like work so well because like the guy escapes from a trap at one point where other people don't escape from traps. And eventually you find out the cube is a series of cubes, 200 and some, or so. I forget the numbers here, but there's 17,000 total cubes. Yeah, it's cubes all the way down, along with teapots or whatever. So it's like, it's basically a bunch of cubes that are linked together, and like they're also like a Rubik's cube because they're shifting the whole time, and they're trying to find their way to the edge of the cube. They do eventually find their way to the edge. The police officer, weird in this sense, black guy kills a white girl, which is weird. Very different. They sort of turn that on its head, you know, which is an interesting juxtaposition of what normally happens. So the police officer is black, kills the white lady physician because he got mad at her, I guess. Yeah. I didn't really understand that part of it. And then he starts to torment all the other people.
It's the ultimate. Yeah. It's so true. It bothers me. I try not to make too many jokes, but yeah. They really were like, okay, how do we make the horror is actually not just the cubes, but the psychological breakdown? Well, let's have one guy just get really mad and kill him for no really conceivable reason.
Let's just have this guy flip his shit. And that's what he does. He flips out. Yeah. And they sort of make their way. They figure it out. They finally, after like one trap room, finally the girl is like, I don't think I understand this system at all. And then the guy, they finally figure out like the kid, like the autistic savant can do factor something. I don't know the math in this. I'm going to
do a cool 47 minutes on the math involved in this. Even as a kid, I was trying to make this make sense. And I was like, oh, he must be factoring the 9-digit numbers, because that's, you know, what would that be in the hundreds of millions? So that'd be anywhere from, well, I guess it could be zeros all the way, but anywhere from zero to 9999 million. And so I was like, well, that's why you'd need Rain Man to help you, because that's going to take forever, especially if you're trying to scratch metal with a plastic button and write. That's how you're writing down your figures.
That's so true.
But no, it turns out He's actually just finding the prime roots of the three-digit numbers, which is not terribly difficult. Like, it might take you a minute, but like, there's a number that ends in five, and she's sitting there like, let me think, is that a prime number? Let me think, hold on, just use the old noodle.
Anything that ends in
It's like,
five?
The number's like 100, and you're like, no, I'm looking at it right now, I'm telling you that's not a prime number. Hold on, let me factor, carry the two.
I know anything about like, math, and I agree.
It makes no sense. And then here's what bothers me so much about this freaking thing. The whole point is this mathy concept, at least, you know, like on one hand, you think, oh, they put a lot of thought to the design behind this cube and what the numbers mean. It's kind of cool. Like, I like the concept of that. And on the other hand, when the savant is dishing out the prime, you know, how many prime factors each number has, he says some of them wrong. Which is not that hard to check. They're 3-digit numbers.
Oh,
does he really?
He does.
He messes it's, up.
As a philosopher, I absolutely refuse to check the math, so I'm going to have to take your word for it 100%.
He does, and it's even in the IMDb notes.
Oh, God.
The guys, it says, he says that 462 has three prime factors when it has four, that 206 has four when it only has two, and then 563 has two, and 911 has three when they both are actually prime numbers. So there's a couple that are actually just prime numbers that he says.
That's crazy to me because, you know, when you go to community college to get your actors, you could just go get an associate professor and ask them too. You know?
True. You could have the associate professor act and do the math for you.
I will say that he probably did, actually.
Cecil, I forget. I don't know if you personally have any theater experience, but, you know, Aaron and I have a lot of theater experience in different realms. And I have to say, this main guy who's the police officer who eventually loses his shit and kills everybody, he is the kind of actor you'd see at like a good regional production who everybody who knows nothing about acting is like, oh, he's so good. Oh, he's just so good. Mm-hmm. You're like, but he just has good diction and does wide eyeballs. Like,
he would do a popular Othello, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they'd be like, he's the best. And I'd be like, no, some people think diction equals acting. Like if you have, diction and a powerful voice, you're just by default, you're the best actor in the world.
I felt like I thought the woman was worse than the dude. I thought the
really?
Blonde woman,
mm-hmm.
the blonde woman, the doctor,
the older woman?
I thought she was worse than the guy because she flips her shit and she looks so unbelievable when she's yelling. I'm just like, oh my God, get out of here. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Also just
the doctor lady, so the physician. Yeah. She was terrible.
While we're being clear, the main character is David Hewlett's character, not the cop. Right, like,
are you talking about the kind of depressed guy?
Yeah, the kind of depressed guy who's a great secondary character on Stargate Atlantis, but can't quite shoulder a whole movie by himself.
He was the only actor that was not terrible.
Oh yeah, he's quite good.
And so this is important, maybe to outline the characters a little bit. I mean, we already started.
Oh yeah, you're right.
But
yeah, I did.
He apparently works at a sarcophagus design firm.
He works in the government as a sarcophagus design bureaucrat. I believe he's in the public sector.
How much design? He's like, I designed the outer shell. Like how much?
Mechanical engineer that doesn't ask questions. That's what he is.
Here's the design. It's bigger than the cube, and it goes outside of it. There's no design. You just draw.
He's part of an advanced mechanical engineer team that doesn't understand what all the rest of them are doing in order to make a very highly precise giant cube. That's what he is. Yeah.
What did you think when someone sent you a requisite for a sarcophagus that's incomprehensibly large? Like, did you think they were going to enclose a city or something with this? Like,
is it a bunker? What is it? Yeah. So I didn't finish how it ended though. It ends.
Oh sure.
Where they try to figure their way out. They eventually ditch the police officer by starting to crush his face at one point, and then they run away at one point.
Yeah,
and,
which, why not just commit to the neck crushing? Like, you all, hey, guys, I can't do this by myself, but if we all shoulder the burden here, we can crunch his neck, and then
lift
we don't have to
your
have
legs.
This a-hole trying to kill us the entire time.
Lift with your legs. But yeah, so he gets ditched at first. Then they do finally, because they use the autistic savant to figure out what rooms have traps and how to get to where they need to go. And the lady figures out where the place is that they need to be for the bridge. And then They finally make it there. They open it. The white light comes in. All three of them start to leave. And then the girl just gets stabbed in the back with like a random piece of the door that the guy has jimmied off. Kills the girl, kills the guy, or doesn't kill the guy, but stabs the guy, and then starts to leave. And then as he's starting to leave, the character who sort of designed it grabs the cop and holds him. And so he gets scissored when the cube moves and he loses.
Yeah, but
smear.
Their budget was completely depleted. So all we see is like a blood stain on the side of the cube.
It's a
That's
tiny
all we get.
Smear. Yeah, a
they're
tiny
done.
Smear.
After the acid face thing in the cube,
there's
a person in the beginning who literally gets diced into cubes by a trap because they're
it's
cubes
guy.
All the way down. Like we got it.
Yeah.
He's not even part of the movie. Like, he's like the first guy they put in there, like, unrelated to the main.
Yeah.
Character.
And I could see if that guy was like made out of onions, you could do that. But that's meat. That doesn't do that. Like, as somebody who knows how to cook, that's not how meat works. Like, it's just, you can't just slide. Yeah. Anyway, in any case, so that's the movie. The autistic savant makes it out. The rest of the people fall down and are bleeding or dead.
Okay,
and
last
that's the end of the
note,
movie.
Critical note, hopefully, about this, and I'll try to save the rest for After Dark. But, like, they get to the last room, right? And first off, part of the Kafka's part that we need to talk about is that they could have just stayed in the first room and it would have revolved its way around to, like, getting him out. So, like, they
but
find
they would have
out.
Never known.
And
but
then
they would have never known.
The ending is they get to the last door, and then the guy who's been depressed the whole time just sits there. Like, even though they're in a hurry, they need to make it out, he just sits there and he's like, there's nothing for me out there. Like, what do you, come on. Like, I'm all for a depressed character who's like, kind of like, oh, there's nothing. But like, even somebody who's literally suicidal is going to be like, all right, I'm going to go out there. It's better to like commit suicide in a place. Like, I want to find out what's that. I'm not going to sit in a cube. That doesn't make any sense. I'm not going to starve to, you know what I mean?
Like, nobody chooses dehydration to kill themselves.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like he waits just long enough because the writers needed the cop to somehow catch them impossibly stab him. Yeah. It's so artificial.
It's the symbolism. Anyway. It's the symbolism of being killed by the thing you helped create, right? It's the person who gets eaten by their own monster at the end.
Well, I mean, he kind of wasn't, though, because, like, the cop killed him, right? Or I guess he didn't. Well, he was stabbed, but he's still maybe surviving. I don't know.
It's unclear what happens to Timothy. Like, yeah, in theory, he dies somehow, right? Of a broken heart, I think, is the way that works.
You know, it's another major error in this movie? No talk of cannibalism. Not a single reference. They're like, hey, the Wren's body, the Wren's delicious body
nobody's
that died early on is
pee.
Just sitting there the whole time.
Well, fun note, draft of this movie, there was a cannibal character. And in earlier versions of the movie, there was also like fungus that grew on the walls that they would eat and stuff. And they eventually decided to strip all the food and water, and it gives it that kind of sense of urgency. That's a good concept, I think. Yeah. But like, you're right. Like they had some like comedic cannibal stuff that would have been fun to keep in.
Well, I'm not even talking about like a cannibal character would have been stupid. I'm talking about like, well, we could die now, or like we could probably gain another few days by munching on this old escape artist guy. We could sustenance.
They could have thrown him in that dicer room, and then he's easy to eat. Right. You chop him up. You know?
Does anybody have an onion in there? They put an onion in the guy's pocket, and then
they had a bread slicer room. They had a dicer room. You got it all in there. It's good. So they had a. could throw him in that room where he lights him on fire, and you roast it a little.
Yeah. Hold on. We found the real plot. Like the cube is actually just a complex.
It's
meal
like,
prep.
Yeah.
It's like a blue apron time. Like it has everything.
Yeah.
It just does everything
exactly.
for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like living inside of one of those infomercial bullets, except, right? You're just living in there.
It does
everything. Like the rules of this system are if you're going to have cannibalism, you have to have one character who is defined by being a cannibal, right? Because everyone else is defined by their one job. So the person who's, you know, like useful skill is eating people. Like you got to have the best cannibal in the world is what I'm saying. That's the way the cube
probably
works.
The best part of this movie for me, and I don't know how intentional it was when the math girl is like, because you know you alluded to it, everybody has a kind of their function, and the math girl turns to the awfully written police officer and she's like, what have you even been doing? All you do is lose your mind and like throw tantrums and hurt people. Like that's all you're doing.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, it's a poorly written character,
you know,
but
also, you know, a critique of the police force.
Yeah.
Just,
It's just not a well done one. I agree with you that that's what they're going for, but they needed like to actually make it make sense.
He's the prison guard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's.
But he's prison guard that's trying to escape from prison.
Yeah, I guess. I also want to roll back. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. I also want to roll back to something else, too. You said that if they were to just, you know, the futility of it all, if you just stay there.
Right.
Then they would. But they wouldn't know if they would have just stayed there.
No, because, I know. But that,
you know what I mean? Like,
it's part of it. Like, it's supposed to rub it in for you. Like,
yeah, like, I guess it's supposed to rub it in, like, haha, if you would have stayed here, yeah. But they wouldn't have had any idea about any of the things that they figured out.
Yeah.
If they would have just stayed there. Yeah. So
it's part of the, like, Kafkaesque absurdity, though.
Right, yeah. Right.
And I think it's the reason for it is, like, when they get to the other side and there's some, you know, some lab coat scientists or whatever it is, they could be like, oh, what did you do? We just put you in the waiting room for, what are you doing? You shouldn't have left. Yeah, that I think it's all setting up for that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So let's get to that. We better talk to the philosopher here about the philosophy. Aaron, what concepts did you want to discuss for this movie?
Well, we already have another philosopher here, so I don't actually have to talk about this. But yeah, I mean, for me, the first time I saw this movie, besides not, you know, like thinking that it was a decent, you know, low budget sci-fi, was that like it captured for me the concept of Kafka-esque in a way that like nothing, including like Kafka's actual work, ever would. So I think the first thing we should talk about is, what do we mean by this idea of Kafka-esque, which is a term that I think a lot of people feel somewhat comfortable throwing around, but when you try to figure out what are the essential properties, it gets a little tricky. But I think this movie really does exemplify it. So like, we've already talked about the issue of going round in circles in a meaningless kind of way. But what are the other things that y'all sort of intuitively think of when you think of the concept of Kafkaesque?
I'm going to confess that I am an ignoramus and didn't know anything about Kafka. Like, I knew of Kafka and I knew, you know, Metamorphosis is the name of whatever. That's mm-hmm. it. That's all. And I had people use Kafkaesque and I guess I've never thought about it too seriously. It doesn't get thrown around that often. So I'm happy to sit here and be educated. But what about you, Cecil?
I always thought it had a degree of absurdity to mm-hmm. it, where there's something when you say Kafkaesque, like you said, futility is a piece of it, bureaucracy is a piece of it, and absurdity is a piece of it, and it's a really complex term because it sort of it encompasses all three of those things.
Yeah, I totally agree. When I think of it, the absurdity stuff to me, I associate a lot with like the existentialist traditions that tried to come to grips with the reality that we live in and feeling like there's no meaning, there's no overarching purpose to it. And so how do you try to achieve purpose in the face of all of that? And that struggle can be a kind of absurdity. So I think of like the myth of Sisyphus and Camus, for example. So that absurdity part is definitely a big piece of it for me. And then there's the like Byzantine bureaucratic struggle that is about sort of both the actual bureaucratic struggle and stuff that like the grinding life that we experience every day, but is also this more, I think, symbolic critique of the nature of culture and the nature of our lives. So
what's Kafka's deal? Did he have a bad like DMV experience? He's like, that's it, I'm gonna write a thing.
Something like
people
that.
People trapped in this bureaucracy forever.
Right. I'm not actually an expert on Kafka's life personally, but it certainly, it gives you that kind of impression alongside someone like David Lynch, where it's just like there was some weird defining moment that drove these very similar stories about this kind of issue of disempowerment in the face of weirdly in the face of a faceless enemy, right? So the other part of the absurdity of this is the like the moment in this movie where they're like arguing over who caused it,
yeah,
like who built the cube, why is this happening to
us?
Yeah,
I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
Because I like the idea, like the concept is fascinating. The Kafkaesque kind of we're going to be a victim of our own bureaucracy. Like the bureaucracy becomes a thing in itself that nobody knows anything about. And I love that, especially. And I also love you know, that the sort of exaggerated forms of that, because certainly we all feel that in our everyday lives from time to time. Or like, if you, you know, I work for the state, so God knows there's all kinds of things. Whenever you try to change something or make something better, you're like, why are we doing it this way? And people are like, because that's, we have always done it this way. And like, nobody ever knows what's happening. They just are like, nobody knows why anything's happening. They just know this little process. And it's a cool thought to think, like, if you take all those little processes and add them up, they become this character in and of itself, this like evil thing in some ways that, I mean, it's not necessarily evil, but it's like disinterested in you, but just causes you problems. But I thought where the movie, it kind of lost me is it wants to be that, which it kind of is. But then the depressed guy who made the sarcophagus, again, not a tough design. Like, mm-hmm. if someone comes to me and is like, design a thing that'll go around a cube, I'll just draw a box and be like, it's that? Is it that? Give me money.
It's hard to explain a box to some people. Don't undersell how hard it is to convey the concept of a large
but
box.
But like, he tries to do this thing. Okay, first off, sorry. I said it was going to be the last time I'd make fun of this movie, but I have to make fun of this stupid part, because there's an earlier time when they're trying to figure out what it is. You know, they're just speculating. And the woman is like, I guess she's a conspiracy theorist. So she's like, oh, it's the government. They're trying to whatever and all that. And the cop guy is like, nah, are you kidding me? The government's just full of idiots like me that don't really, you know, there's no like conspiracy. It's just a bunch of people, which, yeah, I tend to agree with. But anyway, he says, you know what this is? This is some billionaire's sick entertainment. And then the script writers decided that the woman would not only disagree, but like laugh at him for like 45 minutes. She's like, ha, ha, that's your theory. Like, yeah. You're sitting in a giant cube and that's absurd to you. Like, what? It's just an example of the stupid writing of it. Like, no one would do that. That's not a you're in a death cube. And the guy's like, I think this is some billionaire sick entertainment. Even if you thought like that's not right, you'd be like, nah, I don't think so. But maybe, yeah. I don't, whatever. We're going to die in this cube. So we'll see.
Don't they get to aliens too at one point? Like they eventually wind on like aliens.
Yeah, which is totally reasonable.
Yeah,
if I wake up in a giant death cube, aliens is like not the worst guess. It's
I agree. You know, like you know, especially if you've had your clothes changed and mm-hmm. you've got your one item.
Yeah, I would check my anus for probing because I think they tend to do that, right? I'd be like, have I been probed?
This is an important part of the Kafka-esque thing to me, though, is that like the anal probe thing especially, but like the fact that in the face of this absurd situation, this like inconceivable machine, everyone feels driven to give it some sort of reason or explanation.
Yeah.
Right. And like, because I think, and this is the terror of the Kafkaesque world, is the headless monster is more terrifying than the one that has a purpose. There's something more horrible about the thing that like isn't doing this for any reason.
But when you come across a machine of an elaborate you know, conflux of cubes that are on a mathematical system of how they move and everywhere they go, and it's described by a Cartesian coordinates, that's not something that just came about. Like, that's where it loses me, because the guy tries to say, he's like, oh, there's no one's in charge. This thing just is.
Yeah.
You're like what? No.
Just accidentally built this giant structure. Well, whoops.
It's a version.
Sorry about that, guys. Man, my crane, I accidentally dropped all these girders in the correct position. Whoopsie doodle. Yeah.
It's like when the creationist tried to do that. If you found a watch that was in the middle of the desert, would you think that it just eroded into being? And you're like, no, obviously a watch is man-made because it's a man-made thing. That's how a giant cube that has a systemized way of existing, that's obviously been designed from the top down. You can't just accidentally make a cube. That's not how it works.
Well, so the response here, right? So I'll play devil's advocate, right, for the sake of the audience who might
cube's advocate,
right? Yeah. Kafka's advocate here. You know, it's supposed to, I think, signify society, and that like society's form in this bottom up, awkward kind of way, and often take on a life of their own that does things that the members of that society don't want to have happen. So that's why this is coming out of the mouth of the bureaucrat. So like, I mean, I agree with you. It is plausible if you wake up in that situation to assume there's some sort of really absurd designer involved in all of this. But I think it's like part of the horror of that existential nightmare is to go from realizing, no, it's not even a malevolent dictator or a malevolent demon. It's nothing. It's just nothing.
I got to be honest, though, like I would when I thought about this cube and waking up in this cube and the anxiety that would come from being in that cube, that is nothing compared to the anxiety I feel every day in the Trump administration. Like, it's nothing whatsoever. So I feel like I would be like, oh, no, I'm good. I'd like, this is perfect. This
You're
is
like,
exactly,
I'm in a cube.
I feel
There's
safe
no Twitter
in here.
Here.
I, yeah, just I feel kinda... safe in this room with this crazy person.
Then there's one trap room that just like the walls become the Twitter feed of, you know, Trump and everybody. And you're like, no, prime numbers.
Well, I was just going to say, for my birthday last night, we went to an escape room and it was like a Stargate alien themed like escape room. And you like go back and you're supposedly back in time. And I'm like, so for an hour, we're trapped in a place where Donald Trump isn't president. Can we just stay there for an hour, like hang out with the aliens?
That's true. That's awesome. I want to talk about anxiety, though, because I do think like everything that comes from this, from Kafka that I've read has a like a deep anxiety. Like it's not only anxiety like generating in the reader, but it's also the people in it have sort of a deep anxiety as well. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that like when you think about it, it really does transfer very well to the reader. You know, I think about the metamorphosis and that anxiety of the guy who's being transformed into the cockroach. And not that he's just being transformed into a cockroach. He's also anxious that he's missing work.
Right.
And he's anxious that his mom may see him as a cockroach. So there's all these like he is. He's got a deep anxiety, and it transfers so well to the reader. I think that's what Kafka did so well. And now I had never read it, but I was told that there is a story that's very similar to this called The Penal Colony. And I've never read it, but I was told that there's also there's a story that Kafka actually did that's similar to this.
Yeah, and I think The Trial is another one that's often like pointed to as like quintessential of this absurdity of individuals who are trying to act out a societal role in good faith being just utterly destroyed to the point of absurdity by, you know, like their inability to do so.
Right.
I think what's amazing is how well, it's funny, I don't know what Kafka had in mind with the metamorphosis, you know, because I don't know Kafka, I don't know, but like, that works so well as a critique of like American capitalism, which I don't think it's what it at all would have been back then in the, you know, late 1800s or whatever, early 20th century. But like the idea that like you transform into a giant cockroach and like, I can't call in sick. I got no more sick days left. So I got to go. I got to go. You know, like the healthcare system, man. I don't. What am I going to do? I got to go work.
Late stage Kafkaism. Yeah, it's pretty bad. Pretty brutal. It's a bit of a grind. Yeah, I mean, I think we should talk about the social role side of this some too, if we still have time. And like the fact, I mean, like part of all of this is about the fact that these individuals, when put into this absurd situation, still fall back into their culturally programmed roles of liberal and police and academic and bureaucrat.
Yeah, that's right.
And how, I mean, I just think it presents a beautiful microcosm. And a lot of horror does this with these kind of bottled up scenarios where you get to the point by the end where the cop guy has this sense, you're having this sense of like, he's going to take the academic and go and start a new civilization inside of the cube or something. Like he thinks that they're like paired together in this weird cosmic kind of way. So I think the constant urge, it comes back to that idea of the, you know, like we were forced as creatures to generate narratives in the face of an absurd narrativeless universe, and the narratives that we often end up generating to comfort ourselves are ones of control and domination.
Well, I like the idea that I don't know if this is what they were going for, but it's almost like he realizes his own uselessness, you know, like because they On paper, you know, you wonder if this is a designed experiment, you know, if there's some scientists observing them, which they kind of speculate about, like, oh, we're being watched, that kind of thing. And you're like, okay, how will all these roles fit together? Who will do what? You don't need the police out. Like, he's supposed to be keeping the peace, but if he weren't there, everybody would be fine. Like, he's.
No,
and I think it is a good critique. Now, it's Canadian, so I don't know. You know, I feel like they got the horse mounted, you know, thing over there. I don't know what problem they have with police in Canada. You can fill me in. But in America, it would be a good critique of like, yeah, you don't even, you're just causing as many problems as you're fixing sometimes.
Well, I think the reason why the police officer's there is he's probably the only one of them that could do a pull up. So like they would never be able to go up. If they don't have somebody who can go,
they're very. The Rain Man is a convenient character because, like, sometimes they're like he can't do anything, they can't control him, and then other times they're like you need to be quiet and do a perfect monkey bar thing down here, gymnastic thing, and somehow he just gets it, and he's like, all right, sure.
He dismounts with like a 9-9. He's looking at the crowd.
I feel like we gotta talk about him after dark. There's might be some issues.
So good.
There, but I mean, like,
there's issues. Okay.
No, I mean, the other association I have in mind within the sort of classic philosophy tradition is like Plato's analysis of what the perfect society would look like, and in some senses, like you see similar archetypes within these individuals in terms of you've got the guardians and you've got the academics, and then I'm not so much where the bleeding heart liberals would fit in, but what you don't have, it seems like, is the philosopher king who would in theory turn this from a dystopia
into a utopia.
You just
needed an Aaron in there, huh?
That's what I'm saying, right? Yeah, they didn't have any philosophers in there. That would have made it
the depressed, like, you know, that guy is kind of the philosopher. No, he's like, what's the point of any of this?
Yeah,
the dude who got cubed was the philosopher.
I
think it's the guy who died in the very beginning, who got cut in like tiny little pieces.
Yeah. He does look a little bit like Foucault. So you're right. He was probably meant to be the philosopher.
What do you need the prison? Like you need the prisoner, the guy to escape, to show them, the escape artist, to show them like a technique. Right, but it's a technique that eventually doesn't work.
Yeah,
yeah,
it does fall apart. I have to imagine that whoever the scientist observing, it has got to be so mad that cannibalism never came up. He's like, I gave them the Dicer. I gave them the Dicer. I thought that guy was probably like, all right, there's gonna be a good week of you know, Donner Party ask who's going to be eaten. Will it be this guy? Will it be that girl? Let's throw him in the dicer. Let's go. Oh, there's a furnace room. And they're probably just sitting there with a clipboard. Like, come on, cannibal. Like, come on. That's why I set this up.
I do love the death of the expert, right? The archetypal expert, because I think amongst the Kafkaesque ideas is that like expertise is no aid in these kind of situations, even in this like weird situation where like people's different skills are essential, they end up being essential in, you know, getting them back around to the beginning. And ultimately, the only person who survives is, I mean, if we're being honest, the person who you'd least expect to survive. And so there's another level of absurdity. And like, I want to talk about the ending a little bit, because he goes wandering off into this bright white light, and it's like he literally goes wandering off into a giant symbol for enlightenment. And you wonder if maybe like part of this whole point is the cube is meant to represent the cycles of reincarnation that we're all trapped in, fighting each other, and like it, you have to become in this kind of childlike state in order to actually escape. Though that obviously has its problematic implications when you use someone with mental illness in that role. That feels like what they're going for, essentially, right? That like the truly pure heart is the only one that can leave this world. Anybody else get that?
Yeah,
that
but then
me?
Like, why? No, I agree. But then like, also the girl would kind of qualify as that.
Yeah,
like the
she
mathematician
was. She
student,
seemed innocent, you know, the whole
like,
time.
Yeah, but you know, like I think the idea is pure innocent. Rationality can't get you out. Like she represents. She represents an academic who couldn't see beyond sort of the small sort of problems that she was able to solve. Plus, she got bishoped at the end. And like when you get bishoped at the end, that's just the way it goes.
She did get bishoped. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Queen takes bishop.
She gets.
I was going to say, does that mean somebody moved diagonally and got her? What
it
happened?
I mean, that right at the end of the movie, she got stabbed in the back super dramatically. It's from that movie that you didn't like.
Yeah.
Wait,
well,
what?
I think we have to cut on over to After Dark. We're out of time, but we've got some guy. I've got some notes saved for After Dark. Don't worry. Cecil, thanks so much for joining us. We'll kind of sign out of the main show here. I don't know, Aaron, that we know what we're doing next week yet, so we might have to leave that.
Yeah, we'll leave that open for now.
You know, suspense. We'll see which. We'll sit here in this giant cube and see where on the bigger cube that we end up. It just depends on where the Cartesian coordinates take us and whether or not we factored properly. We also have to thank our top patrons. What are they making you say this week, Aaron?
Yeah, special thanks to Philip Gatt, Speaker for the Dead, which is a good suggestion for a podcast episode at some point. Spending a year dead is a great way to avoid tort liability. And Andrew's never wrong. He's just not always right. We'll have to dissect the logic of that.
Still getting the opening arguments cross-post. So, we got to learn the timing on recording to get a good Philosophers in Space one, but that's okay. We still accept any cross fire. That's all right. We'll take it. And of course, Cecil, thanks so much for coming on. People can check you out over at Cognitive Dissonance, or of course, also Citation Needed. Is there anything else we need to throw out there?
That's it. That's everything. Thanks so much for having me on, guys. This was a lot of fun.
All right. We'll see everybody next week, or we'll see our patrons for a little After Dark. We'll really let loose on this movie.
That's all for the main show, but if you'd like to go to patreon.com/zeroG, you can enjoy Philosophers in Space After Dark. Here's a little sneak peek for you.
Make you some bacon and eggs. You're like, yes, I would love some bacon and eggs. If you were to cook those bacon and eggs for me, it would be delicious. And I'm just like, what the f*** happening?
It's a couple minutes after a guy's face was dissolved by acid.
Like,
hey,
melted.
Guys, dinner's on me when we get out of this whole cube thing, huh?
This has been a burst transmission of Philosophers in Space. All music written and performed by Thomas Smith. If you've enjoyed your infotainment upload, please locate the nearest podcast interface device and fill it with 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. If you think Ground Control should spring for fun new goodies and content, consider supporting us at patreon.com/zeroG. You can find us on Twitter at zeroG Philosophy, where Aaron will instantly and compulsively respond. Or you can email us at philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Finally, if you're sad that it takes so long for our signals to reach Earth, you can always find Thomas over at Serious Inquiries Only and Opening Arguments, and Aaron over at Embrace the Void. Until next time, live long and philosopher.